So what's the magic bullet of evangelism? Training. You got to train people. You got to train people. And so the magic bullet of evangelism is evangelism training or witness training or, you know, what they used to call soul winning training. Whatever the phrase is, it's training. Now, in the big evangelism system, you know, the full system, I do talk about training. Personal evangelism is one of the four major elements in the evangelism system. And in the evangelism system, I give what I call a personal evangelism equation. And if you don't recall this right off, let me give it to you again. I give the equation for personal evangelism, and I define it as personal evangelism equals tools, T-O-O-L-S, sometimes with a speech impediment, that word doesn't come out just right. Tools plus training, which is what we're talking about, plus timeliness. And there's some debate about whether or not timeliness is a real word or not, but I made it up if it's not. I mean, Spurgeon made up words. Shakespeare made up a lot of words. The current president makes up words. I can make up words, you know, if we want to. So tools plus training plus timeliness. And in the basic seminar, I do unpack that, and I talk about how you have to give people tools, but there's only so much I can do in 4 hours in the basic seminar, so I'm going deeper here on what those tools might be. And then I really say nothing in the basic training, the basic seminar on training. And so we're going to go deeper into the training. But some people might say, you know, it's just tools and training. So I give people tools to share their faith, and I train them how to use those tools. And that's important. And I'm going to walk you through here in just a moment some tools that you can implement in just 2 minutes. And then also some tools that you can, you know, implement in a few hours, and then some that might take you longer than that. And I'm going to talk with you about some training. And I'm a big fan of having a regular, ongoing, like 2 to 3 hour training. It doesn't have to be 11 sessions, but, you know, one night of training that you might repeat several times throughout the year for different people. But then the reason I add timeliness to all of this is because you can give people tools and you can give them training, but people won't use it unless it's time-bound. And so one of the big principles of sort of human psychology is people don't do what they should do, they do what's urgent. And so you have to create urgency in your evangelism program, and that's why, you know, big days are important. And so when you think about scheduling, and, you know, as you think about doing your homework over the next couple of days, when you think about scheduling your evangelism training, you know, it's best to schedule that maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks before what you are doing, like your big day. So ideally, you know, you might schedule an evangelism training, you know, 2 to 3 weeks before Easter, and you give them the training and you put tools in their hands, and then you say, now use these tools, implement this training, and bring all your friends to Easter services. And so people need some kind of timeliness on it. And then you can also structure that in different ways. And I'm going to specifically on Friday get into what I think are the best times to do evangelism training, but it ties in with that timeliness. But to go to that equation, you know, what are these tools that we need to put in people's hands? And then what kind of training do we have to give them? So here's my list, and I'm going to start with what I think is the most simple and then build up to the more difficult. So the most simple tool and the most simple training that you can do in your church is to lead your people, lead your leaders, to pray for the unchurched. So really, evangelism training starts with prayer. You want to lead them to pray for the unchurched. Just yesterday, I received an email from a group that I'm involved in, and they have a new program where you pray for some church planters. And I'd seen it before, but this was a second or third email, and that's why I send 2 or 3 emails, because sometimes you don't see the first one or you don't pay attention to the second one. And I'd kind of done that with this organization, and I care about them, and I'm involved in them, and I've given some money to them, and our church supports them. But I wasn't that involved with it, but it sort of got me. And I said, okay, I'm going to do that. So I picked a region of the world that, you know, I have an interest in. And they sent me a list of sometimes just blank names, because you can't actually give the name of, you know, some of the missionaries because of particular reasons. But, you know, they're serving here, and, you know, there's kind of a pastor blank and his wife and all that. And, you know, I spent some time last night praying for them. And it was amazing, just in that one little exercise, like just how many times after that prayer time, which was like around 6:30 yesterday, that country popped into my mind. You know, I was reading some online news stuff, and normally I would have just swiped on past something that was going on in that country, but I'd been praying for them. So I began to notice that. And you have this piece of your brain that filters out 99% of the stuff that you see or hear. And it only allows through to your brain things that you're thinking about. And so because I had been praying for that particular country, I noticed it in the news sites that I was looking at. I kind of surmised this family that was in this restaurant was probably, at least historically, or you know, their grandfather or somebody was probably from that country. And then I get back to my room last night and I'm reading the USA Today online, which is a thing called a newspaper. I know a lot of people now don't know what that is, but like before, you know, you had blogs and all that, they actually was like a newspaper, and there was like an editor, and they tried to pick like the best stuff, you know, for you to read, and guess what was in the USA Today? There was a story about a protest that was going on in that country. Now, this was just in like a three-hour span, and this same reticular activator thing, by the way, is why whenever you buy like a new car or you get a new car, and I believe in the Dave Ramsey stuff, you know, don't buy a new car, but as soon as you buy a certain car type that's different than what you had before, you know, you see it everywhere. You know, now it was there all along, but your reticular activator in your brain was filtering it out because it wasn't top of mind. And so the big principle about prayer that I like to teach in regards to evangelism is that people move toward what they pray for. And so you lead your people to pray for the unchurched in their community. And as you lead them to pray in that direction, they start paying attention. They pay attention to their neighbors. They pay attention to the hairstylist that they've had forever but never had a spiritual conversation with. They pay attention to what we were calling in our Titanium meeting this week, divine opportunities. That God's always giving you opportunities to talk about your faith or to make an impact with your faith. But if you're not paying attention to it, you know, you dismiss it. And so, you know, everybody's sitting around the water cooler on Monday morning talking about what they did over the weekend. And if you haven't trained your people, they may not work in that they went to church over the weekend. But, you know, just even that little comment that they went to church that weekend could open some doors. You know, because now somebody at the workplace has a need and they know that this person goes to church, they might bring a prayer request to them, or they might even be led to ask about them, or they might say, we're looking for, you know, this church. Well, they wouldn't even think about that unless you're getting them to open their mind to it. And the best way to do that is you lead them to pray. So how could you work prayer for the unchurched into the fabric of your church? So here's a few things. You know, you have places where you already pray, but how could you add prayer for the unchurched to it? So for example, what if the second meeting of the board, or you know, the every other meeting of your board, depending on how often they meet, or your deacon's meeting that meet once a month, what if every other month you said, you know, we're going to have a prayer for the unchurched? So you're going to pray before that deacon's meeting or pray before that board meeting. But now you're taking an extra effort, you know, to pray for the unchurched. And you might even ask them if they know the names of some unchurched people. Or you might say, you know, there's a new community that's being built just around the corner. Let's pray for those new people that are moving in. Or you might say, here's a list of our first-time guests. You know, we pray every week on Monday for our first-time guests. That's part of the assimilation system. But, you know, sometimes they're not always unchurched. Sometimes they're church people looking for a church. But the majority of them or unchurched. So you work this prayer into the fabric of your meetings. I was mainly talking about, you know, lay leadership meetings there, but also like at your staff meetings that you do. If you happen to have a staff, whether it's two people, three people, or, you know, a larger church like the Journey where we got 20 or 24 sitting around a table, you know, how do you lead them to pray for the unchurched? You're building that in. Most of us have some kind of training for our small groups or for our Sunday school teachers. How could you add prayer for the unchurched into that meeting? And they pray. How about from a congregational standpoint? How can you lead your congregation to pray? And you may not get up and say, today we're going to pray for the unchurched, but you say, today we're going to pray for the community. And you know, our church is not, just a place where Christians are supposed to come. We're a hospital for sinners in the old way of saying that. You know, we want to pray that God brings people from our community to the church or as it might be. We were talking in a meeting earlier this week about when you do a direct mail, get the extra leftovers and you pray over that direct mail. Now, we actually deliver our direct mail to the local post offices because we don't trust the delivery services. We just do it ourselves. So, you know, we pray over those mailers because they represent the homes of unchurched people. How about in your family prayer time? You know, I'm going to come back to this later to talk about how few people it really takes to change the culture of your church. But, you know, in your family prayer time, you know, just going around the table. You know, my family, we make a point to have Sunday night dinner together. You know, can't always have Sunday lunch together because of church stuff or whatever. And, you know, let's talk about, who do you know that doesn't go to church? Or, you know, my son gets into a new grade. Who's some of the kids in your church? Or, you know, we had some people over or, you know, somebody we've just met and we try to come up with. And I have to work hard to come up with my names, you know, to be what I call a strategic consumer. Like anything that I do or I purchase, I try to buy, you know, from lost people. I mean, not logo software. I'm pretty sure they're saved, but everybody else, you know, I try to buy from, you know, I try to get my hair cut by a lost person. You know, I try to go to the lost dry cleaner, you know, that is in the area to build those relationships, you know, and try to get to know my neighbors. I start walking in their direction. They start closing the garage on me, you know, but they've got that sensor. So I put my leg under it. Then it goes up and I'm like, hey, you know, didn't you just move in? You got to work at it a little bit, you know, with it. But, you know, you have in your family prayer time, praying for the unchurched. You see where I'm going with this? And then in your personal prayer time. I mean, this is underutilized in most churches, and it is in our church too, and we have to struggle with it and be intentional about it. Most of you know that our most intentional effort when it comes to our staff is about 2 or 3 weeks before Easter. I bring out a big whiteboard. It's about the size of our photo booth over here. It's, you know, the big board. And one side of the board is where we put all of our numbers from all of our locations and what our first-time guest ratio were and how much the giving was and everything. But then the other side's blank, so I flip it over from the numbers and I write all the staff members' names on there. And we put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 underneath each name. And between now and Easter, they have to come up with 5 people that they're going to pray for and seek to invite to our services. And, you know, the first time we do it, we only have 2 or 3. But then little by little, people come in and they write their names and they build a relationship and they think of somebody else and they interact with somebody else. And, you know, by the time we're done, most people, you know, have 5. And they've got the 5 names under there and they're praying for them and inviting them to church. And, you know, those who don't get their 5, they get fired after Easter and we find somebody else. So, you know, well, we had to let you go because you only had 2 names. You know, sorry about that. Should have had to come up with some more names. People have figured that out. Now they just make up names. But they make up, they're not really smart about it. They use like the first name of a staff member and the last name of another staff member. So it's like Carrick Searcy. And I'm like, I know that doesn't exist. You know, there's nobody named that. I mean, Carrick's the only Carrick like in the whole world. And there's only like, you know, 150 Searcys. So I doubt that's like, you know, a real name, but they don't want to get fired. So they, you know, try to trick me on that. But I'm on to them in spite of the chemo. But, you know, you prayer for the unchurched. I mean, how long does that take? You know, it takes minutes. But you have to think about it. You got to have your reticular activator activated. And then what happens is that begins to change how people see things. And even the most hardened people that you think would, you know, they're sort of against you or working against you. So it does things in the spiritual world. It does things in people's hearts. It does things in your church. So it starts with prayer for the unchurched. So that's one training tool that you put in people's hands. You the tool is prayer, but you train them how to pray. Then another tool that you train people on is a very simple one. You train them to invite their friends to come to church with them. This is called invitational evangelism. Study after study shows that this is probably the most powerful way to get unchurched people to come to your church. It is the only study I know in my lifetime that the statistic has gone in our favor. Most of the statistics about evangelism and about culture and, you know, about how resistant people are, it's gone in the other direction. It's gotten harder out there in my lifetime. But when I first went in ministry, the statistic was something like 1 out of 7 people would come with you, invite them, if you invite them. Today, it's 1 out of 4. So the most recent studies have found that if you make an invite, this the first time a friend invites someone to church, that 1 out of 4 people will do that. Now, I'm convinced if you add prayer to that and it precedes that invitation, and then you add persistence maybe after the invitation to kind of circle back around and say, you know, are you sure, that you could probably get that down to 1 out of 2. Because you're praying for them in advance, you're making the invitation. And a no doesn't always mean never. Maybe it means I don't have enough information, or, you know, a lot of people just say no immediately off the top of their head. But you circle back, that back around and say, now, are you sure? Because we've got this really cool thing going on at our church, or we're kicking out this really new series, or here's, you know, some of the service times, and here's a little card about our church. And then they think about it, and you circle back around. Maybe they say yes. Maybe you get that down a little bit. Studies have shown by my friend Dr. Gary McIntosh and others that 95% of people can do this kind of evangelism. Now, I think 100% of Christians can pray for the unchurched if they're properly reminded, but 95% will consider this and be open to this as an evangelism tool. And that's very different than some of the strategies we're going to look at. I'm going to show you one later that only like 5% will ever do. But this is something that a lot of people in your church can do. If you have been trained in some of the Billy Graham type ways, and of course we've all been thinking and remembering him this week, the Billy Graham organization, they put a name to this invitation process. Some of you help me with this. They called it Operation Andrew. Operation Andrew is what they called it. And if you've ever worked at a crusade or you went to their Christian life and training classes, they had a program called Operation Andrew. Now, theoretically, biblically, it should be called Operation Andrew and Philip. But Andrew shows up first, but Philip does it best in the scripture. This is, where is that found in the scripture? But I think it's in Matthew, Matthew 42. It's in one of the Gospels. It's either in Matthew, Mark, Luther, or John. I can't remember which one it's in right off. But the story goes like this. Andrew brought Simon to meet Jesus. I know it's verse 42. I just can't remember the what is it, John? John 1? John 1. I should know that because that's where my I'm in John in my devotional life right now. I should know that. So John 1, 42. Then Andrew brought Simon to meet Jesus. Looking intently at Simon, Jesus said, "Your name is Simon, son of John, but you will be called Peter." The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, "Come follow me." Philip was from Bethsaida, Andrew and Peter's hometown. And then Philip went to look for, do you remember who? Nathanael. And told him, "We have found the very person Moses and the prophets wrote about. His name is Jesus, the son of Joseph from Nazareth." And then Nathanael said, "Nazareth? Can anything good come from Nazareth?" And then Philip said, "Come and see for yourself." So now Andrew got the yes on the first invite. Philip had to circle around and get the yes on the second invite. He had to do a little explanation because he had to overcome that objection about Nazareth. So, you know, this come and see for yourself idea, this invitation idea is so powerful. And so I'm going to show you and talk with you about some things you can put in people's hands to make invitation easier. You know, you can give them little cards that they can use to invite their friends and different things like that. But you want to train people to invite their friends. And the best time to do that is when you have a big day coming up. So, you know, when you've got an Easter service coming up, you got the kickoff of a really interesting series coming up, like I would say in February. We just did this with a series called This is Jesus. But I've done it a lot in February with relationship series or marriage series. You can do it in the summertime if you've got something big and fun, you know, going on for families or kids to make an invitation. You can do it for your fall spiritual growth campaign. So it's best tied to big days with that you give out invite cards and you invite people to give out 5 invite cards or 10 invite cards to their friends to bring them to the big day. It's very, very powerful. And you know, a lot of people won't show up, but a lot of people will. And a lot of people who get invited to this big day won't show up until the next big day. You know, you have to circle back around with it. But then let me just say parenthetically, there are some other places you can use invitational evangelism. And that is, one is with your new believers. From the first time you have a new believer, and you know, I have a new believer book that we offer the rights to for you to publish your own new believer book, and the folks at Liberty Press will help you with that. But you can buy the rights to my new believer book and then edit it and put your name on it, and you have your own new believer book. I think there's an ad in your program or in your course pack about that. But you know, one of the things you want to do right from the start with your new believers is to get them to think about who they know. Because who has more relational connections with lost people than somebody who just got saved? I mean, you know, the longer you're a Christian, the less relational connections you have with lost people. And by the way, there was like a big study that came out a number of years ago now, and it kind of tried to argue the opposite. So they asked people who had been Christians for 10 years, how many relations do you have with the unchurched? And they rated like more, like on a scale, you know, do you have 1 relationship? Do you have 10 relationships? They kind of rated themselves very highly. They asked new believers, how many relationships do you have with unchurched people? And they rated very highly as well. And the study tried to make the point that, you know, new believers and people that have been Christians for a long time have the same number of relationships. Here's the problem. The people that have been around for a long time, they knew what the answer should be on the survey. And they later found out that it was actually bias in the survey that led to that. Because what person that's been a Christian for 20 years wants to admit they don't know any unchurched people? But, I mean, that's my problem. You know, I spend all my time with Christians. I mean, I'm fairly convinced that most of you in this room are Christians. There are a couple of guys I met at the break that I'm not so sure about, but I'm going to do the Romans Road shortly, and I'm hoping, you know, that there's going to be some conversions before we go to lunch. But, you know, I spend all my time, you know, with Christians, going to Christian growth groups, doing a part of Christians. I have to work really hard at it. But a new believer, I mean, when I first got saved, everybody I knew was lost. I mean, you know, and I immediately, like, you know, I had 2 friends named Dave. One preferred David, but we still called him Dave. You know, I had 2 friends. I tried to get them. I had success with one. I didn't have success with another one. But guess what I found out? The other David, when I moved to South Florida, like, he found out, and he was living in South Florida, and he became a Christian at Saddleback in California. And we just barely missed each other as part of that. Then he took a job with a tech company. He's in tech. If you can't get your Microsoft phone to work, he can fix it for you. And like, really, if you have a Microsoft phone, it ain't ever going to work. So you might as well get something else. But, you know, he connected up with me. And I mean, lo and behold, you know, he's now like a tremendous follower of Jesus. His whole family goes to church and all of that. I mean, that was a seed that was 20 years in the making. And I wasn't the only one. I just may have been one of the first. And then somebody else, you know, added water, and somebody else cultivated that. And, you know, he eventually became a Christian. But, you know, back then, everybody I knew was unchurched. And I got involved with a campus crusade-type group on campus and tried to get my friends to come to that. I got involved in the church, tried to get my friends to come to that. So, you know, train your new believers to say, look, you can't believe what I found. You can't believe what I've discovered. Come with me to church. But then there are other places that you can do this. One is when it comes to baptisms. When you have a candidate who is going to be baptized, and this particularly works well with adults who are being baptized, give those adults some invitations that they can give to their friends to their baptism. And particularly in certain cultures, it is almost considered impolite not to go to their baptism. And so, you know, we've created these little invitation cards that says, you're invited to my baptism. And they can write in their name, and they can write in their date, and they can give it. And so now you're doing this baptism either on a Sunday or maybe at the lake or something like that. And guess who's in the audience? All these unchurched people. So I structure baptism so that I have time to talk to the audience. And the way I normally do that is I tell them, don't change yet. You know, come in your regular clothes and we'll take a picture of all of you in your regular clothes. Then they have to go change. And while they're changing, you know, I've got a pastor over there telling them how we're going to do the baptism and, you know, how to hold their nose and don't fight us and, you know, go all the way under the water or else, you know, you won't really be really saved, you know, and stuff like that. He's over there telling them all that. Well, while they're doing all that, guess what I'm doing? I'm preaching the gospel to the crowd. But I'm doing it. I'm saying, here's why your friend is being baptized. You know, they learned that God loved them. They learned that Jesus died for them. They learned that he came back from the dead. They're going to get in the water and profess that Jesus is the Son of God. And, you know, maybe some of you need to do that. And it hasn't happened often, but I've actually had some impromptu baptisms. You know, somebody gets saved right there on the spot. They just get in the lake in their street clothes or get in the beach with their street clothes. And you've probably seen that. Some of your heads are nodding. So there's ways to kind of maximize this invitation time. And I'm sure you could sit down and think of others that I don't have time to go through. But, you know, I rebel a little bit against this idea that the longer you're a Christian, the more unchurched people you know. I think, you know, maximize those new believers when it comes to invitational evangelism. But again, 95% of your church is at least willing and open to, according to studies, to invite a family member or a friend or a coworker to the church, but you've got to train them a little bit to do that. Now, this is some training that you could probably do in a few minutes. You know, let's say it's two Sundays before Easter, and you've created some invite cards. It's kind of like two business cards folded over. I can't fold this example. This is a John Calvin card, and I just feel a little guilty. You know, I'm sure it was predestined for me not to fold this card, but you know, you take a little invite card like this and you fold it. And you know, on the front side, it says you're invited. On the inside, it tells where your church meets and got the times and a little map. And then the back of it tells some of the benefits of the church about your kids program or whatever. And you know, you create a little invite card. You give them 10 of those. And then during your hosting time, you take about 5 minutes and you say, you'll notice today you had 10 of these that we gave with you with your bulletin, or we call it the program when you came in. And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to think of some people. And in just a moment, I'm going to pray. And I want you to think of some people, and we're going to pray for them. And you pray for them, and then I want you to give them the invite cards. And so you help them do the concentric circles. You know, maybe you've got a family member or a brother or sister or a relative that you can invite. Or maybe you've got a coworker or somebody in your neighborhood that you could invite. And so you have them think about who they could invite. And then you say, we're going to dedicate these cards to the Lord. And you have a prayer. I mean, that takes 5 minutes to make that happen. And you know, will there be some who want? There's always some who want. You know, even in the parable, you know, of the sower, the birds got some. You know, the birds are going to get some. I mean, there's going to be some people who won't, but there are going to be a lot of people who will. And so don't focus on who won't. Focus on who will. Big principle of leadership. Move with the movers. You know, so focus on who will, you know. So in the old Amway sales process, it used to be some will, some won't, who's next? You know, just focus on those who will. So some people will leave the cards behind. Don't worry about it. Some of the cards are going to get left behind. But some of the seed is going to be scattered on good soil, and it's going to bring about a harvest, sometimes immediately with it. And you're going to see people who show up with that. So this is something you can do in minutes with just very little money. I mean, these invite cards are very inexpensive to create. And, you know, we mail invite cards to people before Easter. We have them out on the Easter table. And for our big days, we do it. We don't do it for every series. We just kind of do it for our big days. But then we have a general invite card that you can use anytime. And it's available on our resource table. The most famous one we've done that is not applicable, that would be hard for you to recreate, is we have one that's a subway map, and it's the size of about two business cards stacked together, and it's got the Manhattan subway map on one side. And even people that have been around forever, if they have to go to a different part of the city, they still have to reference a subway map, because they know the green line or they know the red line. They don't know like the other lines. And so it folds over and it fits in your pocket. And I saw they were selling these one time at like a local little vendor for like 99 cents. And I thought, man, I could print those. So I got permission from the MTA, which that was a whole story in and of itself that I don't have time to discuss. But I finally got permission to print the subway map. And they folded over. Well, guess what's on the fold? You know, an invite to our church and information about our church. And that invite is out there all the time. And people take them by the dozens, by the hundreds. And we use it for servant evangelism. We stand at the subway station, and would you like a free map? And at first people thought, well, only tourists would take that. No, everybody wants that. Now, you could take that idea and you could do it with the high school football schedule. And so you could do a servant evangelism project on the first night of the high school football. And maybe, you know, depending on your city or all of that, you have to kind of be a little strategic about this. And I'm a big fan of, you know, asking forgiveness versus asking permission. And I've been kicked out of a lot of places doing servant evangelism. I actually have a little card that says, if you have a problem with the way I'm doing evangelism, here's the number. And it's the number for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I just give it to them. And I figure if I can't win one for our side, at least I'll take one from the other side. You know, so they'll be calling up. You had somebody here, you know. Elder Nelson was out there doing servant evangelism. Yeah, well, you know, you tell them it was me at that. But, you know, you can do the high school football. And so one side's the high school football schedule for the big team. The other side's got information about your church and family members. And, you know, people save that kind of stuff. I mean, you probably save that kind of stuff. They put it up. Now, you can be as creative as you want to with that, but, you know, there may not be a subway or a bus route in your city that would be appropriate for what I'm talking about. But there's something that, you know, you could do that people would want to save, and they would have it. And, you know, my longest standing story on this is we had a lady that we baptized at the church, and it was at least 7 years that she had had the subway map. And the reason I know is because she showed it to me. She brought it to me at her baptism and said, I got this from you, you know, and she didn't even know how many years ago, but I knew because I knew where we were meeting at the time. And I could look at the map on the back of where we were meeting, and it actually even had an old web address. Which, a little tip, by the way, every time you change your website, make sure the old address forwards to the new address, because, you know, you got stuff out there. So sometimes, you know, your church, you get a better address, or you buy a .church extension or something. You know, have all the old websites still forward to the new website. So she'd gone to the website and found us. I mean, how long did that seed have to germinate? So some seed that of invitation will happen immediately. Some people that you invite to Easter services, they'll show up to Easter services next week. Sometimes they don't show up till later. Or, you know, as I teach in the evangelism seminar, and you'll have to get it, they don't really think about it again till they're under tension, in transition, or in trouble. And then they say, well, you know, I had that card from the church, or I had that, you know, church that gave me that thing. So you got to train people in Operation Andrew to invite their friends. Another training that's very powerful, and studies have shown about 35% of your church, if they're trained, they will use this model. Is to teach people and train people to give their testimony. To give their testimony. I wish I had time to do an exercise in here. It could be really powerful if we had time to take a few minutes and let you draft out your testimony and to have a few people stand and share their salvation testimony. It could be really powerful. And when I talk about presenting their testimony, you want to teach people to present it in a very concise fashion. You know, not a 40-minute buildup like I did to get to the magic bullet. You know, they got to get to the point quicker. They've only got about 3 minutes. But, you know, the Apostle Paul, when he gave his testimony in Acts chapter 26, it's a good model. You know, he's standing before King Agrippa. And if you look at that story, he does exactly what I just did. Here's my life before Jesus. Here's how I came to Jesus, and then here's the difference that it made in my life. And he talked, you know, he worked in the resurrection as being central. Now, Agrippa, you know, he wasn't quite converted at that moment. In fact, in verse 28, Agrippa said to Paul, in such a short time, you know, short time, are you persuading me to become a Christian? And then Paul said in verse 29, I pray to God, there's our prayer thing again, that whether in a short or a long time, not only you, but also all those who are listening to me today, and I've been to the spot where most likely, you know, he gave that testimony there in Caesarea, but also all of those who are listening to me today could become such as I am, except, of course, for this chains, and I don't want you to be a prisoner like I am, but I want you to know about the resurrected Jesus. And so you train people to give their, you know, quote-unquote conversion story, their testimony. And that can be really powerful. I'll talk a little bit more about this in the latter half, but we do it in our evangelism training. Our three-hour class that we do is actually 2.5 hours. It's a two-hour training, but it has a break and, you know, different things. But, you know, we have people write out their, sketch out their testimony and then turn to their neighbor and share it. And I mean, it's not unusual for people, you know, to be in tears by the time they hear their neighbor share their testimony, or for them to be in tears in sharing their testimony. You know, Wall Street brokers, grown men, you know, who are just sharing their testimony with somebody at a safe place for the first time. But then, you know, then we also do it at other places where we teach them to share it. You know, we do it in membership class, and we have a section about it in our class 301 and different things where we teach people to share their testimony. And we've done it from the stage. You know, I've done a sermon where I preach on this passage from Acts 26. And then, you know, right there in the sermon, you know, I have people sketch out the basics of their testimony. And, you know, somebody in Titanium was talking about doing that. I think it was you, Paul, if you don't mind me saying. You know, Paul just did that this Sunday, and he preached on the passage, and he talked about writing the testimony. He gave him a little cheat sheet on how to do it, and he said, email me your testimony. And I've had people email it to me. I've challenged them then to post it on their social media, and, you know, put it on their Facebook or Instagram page, you know, their testimony. It can be really, really powerful. There was a quote that came across my desk, or came across my eyes, rather, in reading the other day that has had a profound impact on me. And I wanted to give you that quote. And it's had such a profound impact that when something like that happens, I have like a sheet made, you know, that I can give to all the staff. And I know you can't see this from where you are, and we don't have the projector on at the moment, but this is Jonathan Edwards right here. And I think he and I look a lot alike. You know, so he's got the wig, but, you know, we got the same eyes. And so, you know, got Jonathan Edwards, you know, true genius, intellect. He wrote a book about the Great Awakening, and I'm doing taking a group in the footsteps of Whitfield and Edwards this year. And we were going to start in Savannah, but now we're going to start in Philadelphia, and we're going to work our way up to Edwards' grave in Massachusetts. And so I've been doing a lot of study, and this year my focus is on Whitfield. In previous years, it's been Luther and other people. But so I'm reading Jonathan Edwards' book about the Great Awakening, called The Faithful Narrative, is how we usually call it. I should have looked it up because it's like 18 words. You know, back then the titles were really long. You know, Faithful Narrative of the Surprising Work of God that happened in New England between this time period and that time period, you know, through the eyes of one pastor, you know, in the middle of Massachusetts. You know, we hope you like it, or something like that. I'm sure it sounded better in the British accent. But I'm reading along, you know, with this, and then here's the quote that just jumped off the page for me. Edwards says this, and again, you know, if it was a lesser intellect who had said it, you know, maybe I would have just passed over it. I mean, if you'd read this in one of my books, it wouldn't have been profound, but this is Edwards. This was Jonathan Edwards. So here's what he said. He said, there is no one thing that I know of that God, so the magic bullet, okay? There is no one thing that I know of that God has made such a means of promoting his work amongst us as the news of others' conversion. That's going to be on the blog. We'll post it for you. There is no one thing that I know of that God has made such a means of promoting his work amongst us as the news of others' conversion. I'll lay the poster here on the corner of the stage. Don't take it, but you can come up and snap a picture of it or get the quote if you want it. And it'll also be in the leader's guide for this resource. But during the Great Awakening, and actually in Edwards' book, he shared two conversion stories, one of a little girl, but it basically has been the framework for conversion stories since then. And I don't have time to go into all the history of that today and how that worked. But there's something powerful about conversion stories. And actually, during the Great Awakening, little pamphlets would be created about people who had been converted under Whitfield's ministry. And they would be sent to newspapers or distributed in cities before Whitfield would go in and do his speaking. And these conversion stories spread not only here, but also across the Atlantic. And, you know, in the UK or Britain at that time, they were publishing these conversion stories. And Whitfield said, or Edward said, that's the thing that's kind of keeping the awakening going. That's the thing that's keeping the fires of revival going. So a couple of questions for you. How are you going to train your people to share their testimony? how could you integrate more testimonies into your services? Remember the old days when you used to have the testimonial service? Remember how powerful those were? In the first church I pastored, we had Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. In fact, the first church that I served at, the first chance I got a chance to preach at, they had Wednesday night services, and the senior pastor hated doing Wednesday night, so he gave it to me. As bad as I was as a preacher, at least he didn't have to do it. And I remember when I was pastoring and you had to do 3 sermons a week, I would look for anything to do besides having to write that 3rd sermon. So we sometimes would just have hymn night. Remember that, where they just call it out? It was kind of like trick the organist. And so we would do hymn night some nights. But then on the 5th Sunday, I believe it was, because that's a sacred, you know, apparent thing, something with the moon. I don't understand it all. But on the 5th Sunday, that's a little inside joke. Makes me laugh. Sometimes I just say stuff to entertain myself. I haven't sat up here for a long time. I deserve a little brief break, you know. But on the 5th Sunday, we would have testimony night. Remember how powerful that was? We would have almost as many people, you know, rededicate their lives or make a decision for Jesus on testimony night. You know, I remember one year I didn't have anything for Father's Day. I didn't know what I was going to preach on Father's Day. So I just asked some of the men in the church that I knew were godly men. I brought them up on stage and I interviewed them. You know, first question was, tell me how you came to Christ. Now, I prepped them. You know, they had, you know, they were prepped on that. And, but they told their conversion stories. And, you know, when I was on staff at the big church out in California that most of you know, I mean, that was a regular feature of our services, testimonies. I mean, we didn't go more than 3 or 4 weeks without a testimony about something that was being done. And I'm much different. In that church, they would do 7, 10, you know, sometimes 12-minute testimonies. Of course, the sermons were like 45, 50 minutes. And, you know, if you were as smart as that pastor, you could preach that long too, but I'm not, so I can only preach 30 minutes, you know. So I have to do shorter testimonies. But we are totally revamping things at our church, and I don't have time to go into it, but we're actually working to have a conversion story of some type shared in our church 30 times a year. And it may be just a pre-service video. It may be just a 2-minute conversion story before we go into hosting, or it may be something that we work into the sermon. But, you know, what if Edwards is right? What if this is the thing that God uses to open people's heart to conversion? And I know Edwards would say, you know, the preaching really matters. I mean, Edwards, you know, believed in preaching. It's all a part of the process. But here's a big principle for you. In a day where people want to argue about everything regarding Christianity, they want to argue about who Jesus is and the reliability of the Bible and, you know, church and, you know, evangelicalism and all these debates that people have. In a day when unchurched people want to argue about every possible thing that we do, the one thing that is impossible to argue with is somebody's personal story. You know, you may disagree with it. You may think they're crazy. You may think they've bought and drunk the Kool-Aid or something like that. But the personal story of somebody's testimony is still one of the greatest tools that we have when it comes to what Edwards called promoting the work of God amongst us. Bonus points if you can work in amongst us. The other challenge that I would give to you before I move on, and I have to move on, the other challenge that I would give to you is to share your story from the stage. So we hire a lot of staff. We have new people come on our staff. And for a while, when we had a new pastor join our staff, or even someone, you know, relatively high up on the administrative ladder join our staff, we would present them to the church, particularly, you know, a pastor of small groups or a new worship pastor. I mean, obviously, we have a, you know, bigger presentation, and we would pray for them, bring their family up on stage. For a while, we also had them share their testimony. And we had them share their conversion story. It was sort of the first chance they got to speak to our church. And we would train them, and, you know, they only had 3 minutes. It's at the end of the service. It's after the offering. Everybody's ready to go. And, you know, they feel a little held hostage there at the end. But we would bring the family up, and, you know, I'd introduce Pastor Jose, and Pastor Jose would share his testimony, and we would pray for his family. Now, somehow or another, along the way, maybe just by sheer volume, you know, we kind of got away from that. But I'm moving back to that. In fact, we're doing an initiative in the next few months where we're going to record the testimonies of every one of our staff, and we're going to put it on the staff page for our staff. So when they go there, they're going to be able to hear the conversion story of that staff member. If it's a pastor, by the way, I'm going to do two. I'm going to do the conversion story for 3 minutes and then the call to ministry story for 3 minutes. But that's another talk for another day about that. Because, you know, I'm serious about trying to raise the water level of people being called to ministry. I don't think we're calling out the called, but again, we're not talking about the magic bullet of that. We're talking about evangelism. But how about your conversion story? The second most visited page on most websites, and we can ask the folks back here if they found this to be true as well. But in studies I've seen about this, the second most visited page on the website is the Meet the Pastor page. And so, you know, if you don't have one of those, get one of those really quick. And then for those of you that do have it, think about what you want to put on that page. And we all have, you know, some stuff about our family and our education and different things. And maybe we try to put some funny stuff on there about books that we like or movies that, you know, we think are interesting. But put some videos on there. You know, put a 3-minute video of your conversion story on there. Put a 3-minute video about your call to ministry on there. Put a 3-minute video about, you know, your heart for the church. We're living in a video world. But also share your testimony from the stage. Here's one story, and I got to move on. It has been estimated that Charles Spurgeon, you ever heard of him? Charles Spurgeon pastored in the late 1800s in London. One of the first modern-day megachurches, pastored in one of the poorest areas of town, but grew a great megachurch. It's been estimated that in his volume of sermons, and I have a collection, you know, it's not from the 1800s, but it's from like the 1920s. It was one of the oldest ones, you know, I could find. I have all the sermons. They're all available online now for you to read. I like to study Charles Spurgeon. I think he's a very interesting character in history. He also liked to smoke cigars, so I like that about him. And somebody asked him one time, Mr. Spurgeon, I believe you smoke cigars to excess. It happened to be a Methodist minister. He was Baptist. It was a Methodist minister who chided him. He said, Mr. Spurgeon, I believe you smoke cigars to excess. And he said, a young man, apparently my definition of excess and yours are different. And the young Methodist minister said, well, Mr. Spurgeon, what's your definition of excess? And he said, well, of course, smoking 2 cigars at once. So... It has been estimated that in his preaching, and he has more words in the English language than anybody, even more than Shakespeare, it's been estimated in his preaching that he shared his conversion story at least 250 times during his brief pastoral ministry, because he died young, as you know. And if you don't know his conversion story, it's a snowy day. He can't make it to his regular Baptist church. So to make up for my Methodist story, he actually went to a Methodist service, a Wesleyan service, because he couldn't make it to his church because of the weather. He sits in the back shivering, trying to stay warm. They didn't have a regular preacher. They just had somebody who preached Wesley sermons. So they had a lay preacher as part of that, preaching Wesley sermon. But somewhere in the middle of that, that lay preacher called him out, pointed at him and said, young man, it appears to you, and I don't remember the exact quote, but you know, your heart's not right and you're having trouble and you know, there's problems in your life. And you know, he's like, well, that's right. And he tells them, you know, you need to get saved. And these are modern words. You have to read the story yourself. I mean, if you search it, you know, you can find it. Did I mention there's this thing called Google? You can, you know, just search Spurgeon's conversion story. But I mean, he's converted right there on the spot. He opens his life up to Jesus and it changes him. And he told that story just over and over and over, you know, in his sermons. How many times are you telling your conversion story, telling your testimony? Again, you know, this is in the main evangelism seminar, but you've got to model the way in some of this. Okay, I got to move on. I got one more here before we go to recognize some of our special guest coaching members. So let's see what we've talked about. Let me review. We're talking about how to use the magic bullet, in case I didn't give you the header. This talk, since we come back from the break, has been how to use the magic bullet. So you use it to train people to pray for the unchurched, to invite their friends, to present their testimony. And then another way that you can use it is you use it to teach people to share a quote-unquote simple gospel presentation. One of the things that you want to train your people to do, and studies have shown about 15% of people will do this. So remember, you can get everybody to pray, at least bow their heads with you as you pray. You can get about 95%, according to studies, to be open to inviting a friend. 35% will share their testimony, according to studies. 15%, so the numbers are getting smaller, as I mentioned, will share a simple gospel presentation given the opportunity. So there's some basic simple gospel presentations that I really like. There's some I don't like that I won't mention. But I came to faith in Christ through the bridge diagram. You know, that's what was in Peace with God. If you've ever seen the bridge diagram, you know, it's a simple little diagram. You know, you're on one side and there's like this cliff. And then God, he's over here on the other side of the cliff. And you can't get to him through your good works, or you can't get to him through various means, and all of those fail to bridge that gap. So then Jesus dies on the cross, and the cross bridges the gap between you and God. And so the cross becomes the bridge. It's called the bridge diagram between you and God. And then there's some other points about you turn from the way you were living, you trust in Jesus and step out onto the bridge, and then you follow the Lord, you know, for the rest of your life. You know, that turn, trust, follow, that was the thing that got me. You know, the bridge diagram, and they still have, you know, Peace with God little booklets, and you can teach it. I've done it many times. I bring the whiteboard up on stage, and I teach the bridge diagram with that. You can find it in other places as well. Randy Racebrook from the Navigators, he took it even more simple, and he created one verse evangelism. And I believe it's, he takes Romans 6:23, and he takes Romans 6:23, dissects it. You can, again, find it on the Google, one verse evangelism by Randy Racebrook. And you can see it. I mean, it's something you can draw it on a napkin. And he does Romans 6:23 and takes each word in Romans 6:23 and he uses that word to build the bridge diagram. It's very powerful. It's basically the same kind of thing. And I'm sure there's other simple gospel presentations that you can think of. But one that recently has come back on my radar, and I referenced it earlier, but I had sort of dismissed it, is what we commonly call the Romans Road. So I'll tell you a story about that. We like to bring in guest speakers from time to time. We've had some big days over the years by bringing in some local celebrities or even some national celebrities. And, you know, we've had Daryl Strawberry to come give his testimony at the church. And I ran an ad about Daryl Strawberry speaking at our church. And I put in the ad something to the effect of, limited seating, we will fill up, come early. And I remember the first time we had him, it wasn't quite as big the second time, but the first time we had him, we had a 10 o'clock service, and we don't open the doors, you know, until like 9:55. Well, there was like a line down the block. First time we'd ever had a line down the block of people. I mean, they literally took that serious, and they came early. And he can only speak live in the 10 o'clock service because he had stuff, so we had to show the video of him in the other services. And they were lined up down the block. And I mean, he has powerful testimony. You know, to hear his story, and you've probably read his books or watched him online. And then sometimes we've used testimonies that we find online through, Life Church or, you know, I Am Second type videos, and we've shown celebrities from that. We don't actually have them there, but I've co-taught messages with Dave Ramsey before, and he's never even showed up at our church, you know, through these videos that are there. But then, you know, the other week we had a guy, we actually had him a couple times. This was the second time he was there, a golfer. Named Bernhard Langer. Do you know him? He's on the Champions Tour now. He often wins, and he's a German guy, and he lives in Boca Raton, where I live. He's a great Christian guy, does a lot of stuff with like Christian athletes organizations and all of that. So, you know, he came, and he'd been with us before, so we'd heard his testimony. So he came a second time, and he kind of did something different. And then at the end, he said, I want to conclude my talk by sharing four verses with you. And he said all four verses come from the book of Romans. And he basically did the Romans Road and gave an invitation. And people marked it, and we followed up with people. And, you know, we had a number of people make decisions from that. But here's what was also interesting. I had a lot of long-term members in the church come up to me afterwards and said, can I get those four scriptures? I didn't have time to write those down. And I realized our people don't know the Romans Road. So I decided I'm going to teach about it. And, you know, the Romans Road, we won't go through it now because, well, maybe we should because some of you may not be yet followers of Jesus. But The way I learned it was from the King James, so you'll forgive me here for the language, but Romans 6, it starts with Romans 3:23, I believe. Romans 3:23, it says, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." So you start there, then you go to Romans 6:23, and you can add some verses in. You can go to Romans 3:10 if you want to. You can go to Romans 5:12 if you want to, but usually the shorter version is Romans 3:23, and then it goes to Romans 6:23, where it says, "The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God," and I like the New Living Translation better because it says the free gift, "but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord." That's sort of a paraphrase of the King James. Then you go to Romans 5:8, which is a little weird because you have to go backwards, but you do it. Romans 5:8, "But God demonstrates his own love to us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." Then you take them to Romans 10:9 and 10, I believe it is, that if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart, if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes unto righteousness, I believe is how the King James says it, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. Then you can, by the way, add one little last verse, which is Romans 10:13, and it says, "Whoever," or "whosoever," that's a powerful phrase, "whoever calls on the name of the Lord," capital L-O-R-D, "whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved," shall be saved, is how the King James Version does it. So I just walked you down the Romans road. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God, Romans 10:17. So if you're not yet a follower of Jesus, I could lead you in the sinner's prayer. We will have counselors in the back. The buses will wait for that. And I'm only half joking. If this was the boot camp, I might actually do it. Because I've seen some of those staff members you bring, and I'm not sure about them. The point is, you got to teach this stuff. Teach them how to pray. Teach them how to invite. Teach them how to share their testimony. Teach them simple presentations of the gospel. And if you don't like any of those, find your own. You know, the Vineyard's got some new stuff that they've come out with. Your denomination probably has some stuff that they've come out with. You know, come up with it. You know, I wrote a book, The Difference Maker. That was my attempt at all of this. You know, the little book, The Difference Maker. I do a couple chapters on what it means to share your faith and why you should share your faith and the difference you can make in somebody's life. And then I have a chapter, and I have a couple of other things in there. I have the morality ladder, which I didn't have time to go into, which is a really kind of modern way to share your faith. But then all that's in there. And then I'll give you one last way here that is sort of the most in-depth of all of these. You know, train people to sustain an ongoing gospel conversation. You want to train them to sustain an ongoing conversation. This is, you know, the more in-depth training. You know, this is where you get into handling objections. You get into witnessing to certain types of people that maybe are more hardened to the gospel. You know, this is like the big 6-week training or the big 8-week training that you might do. And it's probably best done as like a small group study. Or maybe a multiple, you know, course over time. And, you know, about 2% of the people, usually those who have the gift of evangelism, will show up for this kind of class. And, they really want to dig into it. They really want to go deeper. And this is a little bit beyond my talk today, so I'm not going to give too many examples, but you can think of these kind of classes. You can find these kind of classes. There are small group studies on this. We just had a guy come to our church who had written a book about this kind of thing. And if you study his book, it really goes in depth into like how to share your faith in the postmodern world. I won't say his name publicly, but if you want his name, I'll share it with you privately in the name of his book, and it's good. And you know, not everybody's going to come to a class like that. They're not going to read a book like that, you know, where you get into like proofs of the resurrection and verses about is Jesus the Lord and, you know, eternal security or not, or whatever these things might be, or how to share your faith with a Jehovah's Witness, or, you know, how to share your faith with, an atheist or whatever. I mean, these, you know, that in-depth, broad kind of thing. And, you know, a lot of people would never go to a class like that, but some will, and you should offer that kind of training in an in-depth way. So I want you to think about what it would look like for you to put together a training. So I wrote a book called The Difference Maker. And this was my attempt to try to do what I've just been talking about. It was a little book that I wrote where I try to train people to pray, to invite their friends, to share some simple gospel presentations. I don't get into the big gospel conversation and ongoing stuff there at the end, but I do get into all of that. So you can take a look at that. It's a little tiny book, and it's not designed as a giveaway. It's designed to be used as part of a training.
Well, hey, it's Seth Stone back in the studio. Now, at this point in the teaching, Nelson wrapped up section two by challenging the coaching members at the live event to hold something called the Difference Maker Training, or something, a training on the evangelism for your church. See, we did this at the Journey Church where Nelson's the lead pastor, and we called it the Difference Maker Training. It was a two-hour evangelism training around Nelson's book, The Difference Maker. Now, you don't have to use the book, but I do think it goes really well with the training. In fact, at the Journey, we gave everyone in attendance the copy of the Difference Maker book. Now, here's what we do. We did. We build out the training, and we want to give it to you for free. And why do we want to do that? Because we want you to host an evangelism training with your church. And we just know how powerful it is to train your people to share their faith. So what we did is we took every document from the training that we did at the Journey Church and we put it together for you. Just like this resource, we have leader notes, student notes, and we have transcripts that you can see. We have audios that you can listen to. We put it together like we do with resources that you would pay $99 to get. But we want to give this to you for free. See, in fact, you can see this in your notes. We have a website that you can go to. It's www.churchleaderinsights.com/DM training. In fact, I want to encourage you, this is part of your homework to go to the website before you start section three of this training. You'll see on that website, you'll be able to download everything. We have audios from two of the Journey Church's teachers teaching the seminar. We wanted to give you both so that you could see the two different styles. Maybe you could find one that you like and you could use that one to prepare. And we've also given you documents that you can download. We've given you flyers and graphics, and you can use those to create your own advertising for your evangelism seminar. We even put together an event promo timeline. Here's what you should do 3 weeks out. Here's what you should do 2 weeks out, 1 week out. Everything that we did to promote and get ready for our evangelism training seminar. And then we put together even a sample event timeline. Here's what we did at 7 o'clock. Here's what we did at 7:05. Here's what we did at 7:15. Here's when we took a break. Here's the exercises that we did. Here's what we asked the people in attendance to share their faith. I mean, we put everything that we possibly could in here just to help you do an evangelism training with your church. Now, we called it the Difference Maker Seminar. You don't have to call it that. If your church is called The Journey, you could call it The Journey Seminar. Or if it's Believers, you could call it The Believers Seminar. You can call it whatever you want. But here's the thing. Content is key. Because the content is going to be teaching people how to pray for the unchurch, how to invite their friends to church, how to share their testimony. I mean, there's actually an exercise where they can share their testimony during the training. And you can do that exercise or you can choose not to do that. And when we did it, we taught them the Romans Road. We taught them the bridge diagram. And I think that's the only two that we had time to get into, but we did introduce a few others to them. And if you decide to use the Difference Maker book, that's what that book is about. It shows other ways that they can share their faith. It's all in there. So here's your homework. Before starting section three, go to this website, www.churchleaderinsights.com/DM training. I want you to look through all of the resources we have for you there and challenge you to hold your own evangelism training. In fact, I want to challenge you to schedule a training in the next 4 months. Go ahead and look at your church calendar, meet with your staff, your team, your volunteers, and find a date that you can schedule to hold your evangelism training. When you do, I'd love to encourage you to email Nelson, to email me your date so that we can pray for you. And then think about this. What better thing can you do than schedule a training where you're going to train your people to share their faith? That's one of the most important things that we can do as pastors. So we encourage you, go to the website. I'm going to say it again, www.churchleaderinsights.com/DM training. You have everything that you need at that website to schedule your own evangelism training. I hope you do. I hope you use this to encourage your people to share their faith. But once you do that, jump back in with session 3 of the Evangelism Magic Bullet.